Blog Talk Radio.
Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Oje Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun, to all the God children, Mojuba Egun, to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun, to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun, to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun, to all those that are listening. Who are tuned in, we give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe-o.
Ashe-o. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC, the United African Coalition for Justice and Human Rights, and New Power Radio Network. We began the UAC after the unjust Zimmerman verdict of July 2013, and we ask that you please continue to support us and our sponsors, Manhood, Race, and Culture, headed up by my co-host on Wednesday nights, Dr. James Jones, out of Prairie View University in Houston, Texas. Please find him on Facebook as James Jones and Manhood, Race, and Culture at the like and group page, as well as on the World Wide Web at manhoodraceculture.com. Also, please support Unity Divine. Unity is spelled U-N-I-T-E-E. Please find Arlie on Facebook as Arlie Gordon, Unity Divine, and UnityDesign.com on the World Wide Web. And again, Unity is spelled U-N-I-T-E-E. And last but not least, we always want to remember to acknowledge and appreciate and send out positive love and energy to all of our brothers and sisters who are behind enemy lines and the families and loved ones that they represent. So please find Unheard Voices, the Free Alabama Movement, and the Free Ohio Movement, respectively, on Facebook as well as on the World Wide Web at freealabamamovement.com and freeohiomovement.org. So as we begin to kick off this week's dialogue, we have the honor and pleasure of having Baba Hakima, Kenyatta joining us tonight. Welcome, Brother Kenyatta. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Good to hear your voice.
I say likewise, likewise. And you represent a wonderful LLC called Us Lifting Us. So please introduce yourself to the listeners and tell us exactly what Us Lifting Us is.
Yes. Again, my name is Hakima, last name Kanyama. I'm located presently in the Atlanta metropolitan area in a little town called East Point, right underneath Atlanta, predominantly black township. And so I represent Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative, LLC. It's a global business formation that exists for the single purpose of perfecting a process or mechanism, system, by which and through which we can gain greater economic control over the communities that we live in, the regions that we, you know, do commerce in, but to also connect it to a global process of Africans doing business with Africans. And so I guess the skinny answer is that ULU is a business formation with the purpose of, I'll expand it a little bit, of developing methods to aggregate the resources of our people and direct them towards building and running successful co-op businesses, again, for the overall purpose of rechanneling or redirecting our spending habits, but to build an economic base to support our movement.
Ashe, now we've talked a lot about economic sustainability, self-sufficiency, and things like that. It sounds like ULU was put together to actually implement those things and empower the community in the process. How long has ULU been around?
Well, we got started, excuse me, as a think tank in 2011, and in our current form would be June of 2013 as Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative, LLC. A year before that, we incorporated, but we dissolved the corporation, the legal moves, and reconstituted as an LLC. So we've been around since, in a technical sense, since 2013, June. But the the work actually started in 2011. But again, the impetus for ULU really goes back, you know, long time. For instance, we've been celebrating Kwanzaa since 1966. And the fourth principle, of course, of the Nguzo Saba is Ujamaa, or loosely defined as cooperative economics. And I have personally celebrated Kwanzaa maybe for all of that time, maybe except for 2 years. So probably in 67 or 68 when we started celebrating Kwanzaa. And so the reason I bring this up, each year, and for some of us who celebrate Kwanzaa or the Nguzo Saba, the Kwanzaa principles, year-round, we have discussions about cooperative economics ongoing. And part of our discussion with the formation of ULU is that we really could not find and have not developed power, political power, buttressed by economic power, from the concept of cooperative economics. So we began to modify at least our use of that term and give it a different definition. And we call it family-centered economics as opposed to individually-centered economics. So we champion group ownership. Of course, cooperative economics speaks to us building and owning shops and businesses together and profiting from them. But if we don't own them together, it's hard for us to profit together from them. So, but again, technically, June of 2013 is when ULU launched. And I'll just share this with you. There are some fundamental legal principles upon which we are built. First of all, there's no limit to membership. And membership in ULU is a person or a business deciding to become a partner with us in the company, the LLC, the limited liability company. The second premise is that members can not only be individuals, but members can be married couples, man and woman, and also any legal institution. A church can be a member, a sorority can be a member, a business can be a member, other co-ops can be members. The other fundamental is that members do not have to be U.S. citizens, such that we can have members throughout the world, and we have members in other countries currently, at least 8 other countries. The other thought is that members and only members can acquire equity in the company and qualify for profit sharing. And that's an integral part of what it is that we do. We know that people will join and invest and contribute if it's benefit rich. In other words, if something tangible can come from it, even if they're not directly involved on a day-to-day basis themselves. And the fifth premise is that in that members and only members can acquire equity in the company. So an equity position in ULU is not a commodity. It's not a security. In other words, so that we're not involved in asking everybody in the world to support us and to secure equity in the company. It's a closed environment from that standpoint. And so with those things being in place, we feel that we can grow into the hundreds of thousands, eventually into the millions in terms of membership. We think that we can aggregate resources, both human and material resources, as the foundation for building and sustaining a new black economy. Membership is only $50 a year, and then equity in the company is at whatever level a person chooses. Once their equity account has reached $1,000, then they qualify for profit sharing. At least that's one of the requirements. And so in terms of scale, it's important that brothers and sisters understand that we are very aggressive and far-reaching in terms of our aims and objectives. But in terms of scale, for every 1,000 units of equity secured by our members, that's $1 million. We feel that we can grow to a level of effectiveness and efficiency such that we can do that over and over and over again to fund the economic ventures that we envision.
Ashe. Now, I'd like to go back a little bit, Baba Hakima, and talk about the Ushima, you know, collective work and responsibility, and Ushama, the familyhood. And it sounds like that's how Ulu is set to run, and putting those elements of the goals and objectives first. And so we've got an environment right now in our community that people are really caught up in just trying to make it. And
yeah.
to introduce something like Ulu to the community, how are you doing that? And how can people who want to find out more, where can they go to look for information?
To answer the first part, the last part first, usliftingus.com is the website, and that's where all of our information is housed, usliftingus.com. And the reason we chose the name, because most of us will agree that no one's going to lift us but us, and so usliftingus.com. And one of the things in terms of cooperative economics or Ujima, we felt that as we introduced to the community a new economic model or new economic paradigm, we had to infuse it with something that was going to be a difference maker. And what we have infused in our process is ownership. So we talk about ownership a lot. Ownership is the glue. It is the webbing material that holds us together, because we're owners of a business platform together that can grow into the millions, tens of millions, and into the billions of dollars, where we own it together, and not a scenario where I'm supporting you and you do what you choose to do independent of me. I may or may not benefit from it, but we have created a platform where we can, in fact, be members together. And so we are introducing it to the community in any way and every way that we can. We know that the thinking of many brothers and sisters will have to change in order to accommodate what it is that we are talking. But we're not trying to replace entrepreneurship and black business ownership. What we are simply wanting to do, and we're having some success at it, is creating the space for a group ownership model in the landscape of what we do. So we're going to always have more businesses that are individually owned, a small group owned in the community, but we think it's important to create some space also for a large-scale group-owned enterprises that can grow to a level that most businesses that are individually owned or small group owned can never grow, and use that to support the other sectors in our community. And we know that everyone is not going to warm up to the idea of group ownership, because most of us want to get off the plantation and become our own boss. And so we are geared to scraping together a little money and some support so we can strike out on our own as entrepreneurs, and that's necessary, and we applaud that. And some of us, you know, quite frankly, are going to have to stay on the plantation. We're all on the plantation in one way or another until we, in fact, break through and become independent and sovereign. But we don't think that it's going to take an awful lot of people or institutions to create the clear example of what it is that we're talking about. And so we are comfortable with incrementally sharing our message and showing through example the power of group ownership.
Ashe, now when you spoke earlier about the fact that this is member-owned, an LLC, for-profit, and the membership composition, there are quite a few. I just became a member, as you know, and there's quite a few diversified folks and organizations represented on the membership list. And so talk about some of the people who are currently involved in ULU, and it's open to families as well. Is that true?
Well, married couples and other legal institutions, but not so much a family. Now, there is a feature where a member can take out a custodial membership for a minor, for a child, and begin to build equity in the company for the child. But the child will not be able to vote and participate at that level until they reach the legal age, 16 or 18, whichever the legal age is for the state or country in which they reside. But the membership is broad, youth, some minors, a lot of elders, a lot of professionals, other co-ops and other investment associations. So the membership is varied and broad. Some people who have international name recognition, you know, some people who nobody knows, you know. But if you go down the list and take your time, you'll see, as an example, an elder like C.T. Vivian, who was a steward of the civil rights movement with Martin Luther King. You'll see, you know, people like Bob Law up in New York with the for a while Night Talk live syndicated radio program all across the country. And for those of us who, for instance, know about the Haitian Revolution and the struggles of our brothers and sisters in Haiti now, one of the strong leaders and voices in Haiti, Mama Baina Bello, you know, is a member and endorser. So it just runs the gamut. We have brothers and sisters in the UK, in East Africa, West Africa, in the Caribbean. One of our strong members who comes here quite often, I shouldn't say quite often, but there's a really important struggle that's happening in Bermuda now. Of course, that small island is predominantly black, but they are gentrifying the whole island, and you know, and our brothers and sisters are struggling to maintain their existence on the island. Many of them have, a couple of thousand have had to actually exit the island because of what's going on. But Mama Peggy Burns is a leader on the island, but also an ULU member, and look forward to ULU businesses coming to the island. And so from the standpoint of unity, the ULU platform is a platform that people can join basically from where they are, from the church, from the mosque, you know, from being a progressive, from being a socialist, from being an integrationist. The single thing that binds us is something innate in human beings. And I can sum it up with the song title that one of our ancestors, the song "God Bless the Child That's Got His Own." And we know instinctively what that means. And so our members are people who want us to have our own business base, our own cultural base, our own social base, so to speak. And so that's the thing that we have in common, but there are different politics, different spiritual communities. You know, people are into any number of things. For instance, I spoke with a young brother today who joined as a co-op. And his co-op is Pecan Milk Co-op. They process pecans and make milk out of them, but they're also going to maybe next year do butter, and then they'll also do a mayonnaise kind of process, but all vegan, but from the pecan. But our last member is a co-op also. The primary representative is in Hawaii, but the co-op itself is in Ghana. It's a poultry farm co-op. So the membership is varied, and as we continue to grow, we will even see more variation.
Ashe, when a business joins, or whether it be a small or a large business, is there a difference in the membership amount and
no.
what they pay to become a part of the LLC?
No.
Okay. Okay.
Membership, the important thing now, let's say an individual joins, but their business also joins. The only thing we have to be clear about is that the same individual cannot vote for themselves and vote for the business. In other words, if there is no other person to participate in the voting process, that would represent the business and then the individual. Only one can vote. So the main thing is one member, one vote with elected leadership. And we do have elected leadership and a nine-member board, and it's rotational with three seats being up for grabs, so to speak, each year. And again, our international members can participate and be elected to a board position as well.
Wow, that sounds like a good opportunity, especially if a younger person is looking how to be creative in their approach to business development. Does ULU offer trainings and things like that as well if people are interested in going into business?
We do not at present. We have that as an objective. That's something we'll do in the future. There is a good bit of support for co-op businesses and for entrepreneurial businesses in many of communities, but we're not at that capacity now, but we will be. We'll be able to help incubate business. Our primary business model, which is a large edifice, big box store that's separated into departments. We call it the Us Lifting Us Market and Exchange, or ULU Mart for short. We're talking about a building on a scale of 150,000 square feet, the size of a Home Depot or Lowe's. We will have incubators in there and a way for people to, as little as $50 a month, with dedicated floor space and tabletop space to start a business with some technical support. But that whole complex will be a farmer's market, a large a consignment component, weekly auctions, commercial kitchens, commercial canneries, commercial coffee roasting, movie theater / event center, office space for rent, but the majority of the space will be taken up by specialty stores, booths, and kiosks. But this will be a multi-use platform where entertainment, education, commerce will take place all at the same time. We'll do strategic bulk buying, credit union, barter and trade network, alternative currency maybe. But these we focus on as anchor institutions in a community that our markers, so to speak, that we're coming back to take economic control of our community. And so much of what would go on inside the walls can spill out into the broader community in various ways. So that's our primary business model. What we're working on right now is a series of coffee houses, and that's where we'll get our feet wet initially, and we'll probably also do some light manufacturing in the technology field.
Interesting. The coffee house concept, I know that that's something that we often are consumers of, but I have yet to run across, I'm not saying that there aren't any, a black coffee house. That's an excellent approach to, one, gathering our people in a safe place and in the same space, but two, offering them something that we consume and spend our money on anyway. So I think that that's an excellent idea. Talk about the coffee house a little more. Give us a picture of what it would be like.
Yes, and not only do we consume coffee, but we grow coffee. You know, coffee is a black thing. Coffee is a black thing. The mother plant of all coffee in the world starts with Ethiopia. And so we'll be sourcing coffee from our people in various parts of the world. But the coffee house, the name of which is Cafe Ulu, Cafe then Ulu, Ulu being our initials, us lifting us. And we will feature coffees grown and produced by our people on the continent and in the Caribbean and maybe even in South America. We will also feature, you know, of course, networking and an internet cafe environment. But we'll also do small, you know, spoken word, you know, book signings, small events as well. We'll have a food menu. It won't be elaborate. But we want to create a string of coffee houses throughout the country that, as you say, are safe places for the family, for us as a community, but also that it takes the in that space, we're clear that we are participating in the global coffee trade and joining with other brothers and sisters who are attempting to gain greater control of that industry and that market, such that not only would we be buying coffee, but we would be participating with brothers and sisters if we did it or they did it, where we would be in control of the planting of the plant, the harvesting, the processing, the transport across the world, the roasting, the weighing, the bagging, everything that's involved in the coffee industry. That's an industry that we should dominate. Currently, I don't know that there's an industry that we can point to that African people dominate. And this is one that we should dominate. It's ours. We just simply got to take it back. And so Ulu, in addition to building for-profit, successful for-profit coffee houses and spreading them throughout the country and maybe in other parts of the world, we will participate in a strategic way in the coffee industry.
Nice. And now... You're in the Atlanta area. Is that where the first coffee house is projected to be?
Yes, indeed. In Southwest Atlanta. So for brothers and sisters who are familiar with the music coming out of Atlanta, especially the hip-hop music, you know, it's often talked about SWATs, Southwest Atlanta. So the first coffee house will be smack dab in the middle of SWATs. And we may, you know, maybe do two or three coffee houses in the Atlanta metropolitan area before we move out, or we may not. There are some other communities where we have Ulu members who want the coffee house to come to their community. So, but yeah, the first one will be here, and we're right on top of. We're looking at, you know, the legal lease in terms of inking the first location as we speak, and so hopefully by the next time you invite me on Signs of the Time, we'll be talking about a ribbon cutting. And so, but yeah,
that sounds good.
We really have got to move from the phase where we're talking about things, and to the phase where we're doing things. We probably are the greatest fabricator or creator of ideas on the planet. We've got all of these ideas, and they're fantastic, but we've got to bring them to reality and make them work with good service, good business practices, and we're committed to that.
I can't think of a better time for people who are interested in not only joining, but think the coffee house idea is an excellent concept. Now would be a good time for them to go ahead and join. And so is it too early if they say, oh, you know, I would love to open a coffee house in, say, Cincinnati? is it too early for them to join since the first one isn't open yet? Or can they go ahead and join it and get involved in the committees and
kind of
get their feet?
No, membership in Ulu is not about the coffee shop. Membership in Ulu is about a grand strategy to build a multinational business platform where we can do coffee, we can do hospitality, we can do energy, transportation, agriculture, everything that we need to do to build a black economy. As you may know, and I'll be quick on this, in 1956 in Spain, a Catholic priest and five students from a technical school started a small co-op producing a heater, a little small heater to heat a room in a house. And from that, they grew into where today they do more than $20 billion a year gross dollar. They've created more than 100,000 new jobs for their members. They own insurance companies. They own banks. They own the largest supermarket chain in their part of the country. They own housing complexes. They own any number of things, all starting from one small co-op with six people. And so our DNA is to grow Ulu to a multinational enterprise that can favorably compete for our space, for the space for our people globally as it relates to economics. So when brothers and sisters consider joining Ulu, they become participants and partners in everything that we ever do, not just the coffee.
That's excellent to know. Now, the Mondragon model that you speak of, it happened in Spain. I happen to be very familiar with that. I have proposed to the city to open up a cooperative laundry, a commercial and residential laundry. One, the community that I was in needed a laundry facility because of gentrification. The former laundry facilities had been vacated and abandoned in some cases. And so there was a real need, not only from an economic standpoint for a laundromat, but we also had an issue with health and bed bugs in the community. And people were washing out their clothing and things like that in the tubs and hanging it up. Well, that's not, doesn't generate enough heat to actually eliminate any sort of infestation problems, especially when it comes to bed bugs. But unfortunately, our community was aggressively gentrified by Group 3CDC, and the project got approval from the community council and everything like that, but they basically took our building from up under us, and that's happening. Gentrification is an issue across the U.S. How do you suggest that people maintain their footprint in their community when we're losing our communities, you know, to high-end developers, especially almost on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's happening big time here as well. And what we suggest is we hurry up and pool our resources, invest in businesses, acquire the real estate, invest in more businesses, acquire the real estate, invest in more businesses, acquire the real estate, and upgrade it in terms of larger businesses. Mm-hmm. For instance, that laundry could have actually been done by us because we got the money, we got the resources, we got the know-how. What I think we don't have in most cases, we don't have the organizational skills and the infrastructure to the organizational infrastructure to pull it off. So the only thing that we can do to stem gentrification is that we got to own it, and we got to own it deep, and that's our firewall: ownership of real estate and successful business operations. And if people who are trying to gentrify those communities understand that they can't come in there and make any money, they'll go elsewhere. But they're predators, and so a predator's natural instinct is that if there's prey there, they're going to come. And you can't stop them just by, you know, trying to pass a resolution or saying, you know, woe is me and think of what you're doing to the community, because they don't care. They have no heart. They have no soul. They're predators, and that's what they do. And so we have to, from the opposite position, from love, we got to pool our resources and take control of the economic destiny of those communities. And in some cases, it's too late. So we have to look at where we can, you know, can reasonably make a stand. Yeah, sometimes we emotionally attach to a community, and it's gone. It's really not ours anymore. And to make a stand there, you got to really be at a large scale where you can come back and beat them back with large scale enterprises. And we're generally not there yet. And I know we're not there from the standpoint of Ulu and what we're doing in Atlanta. Yeah.
Ashe. Now, this Ulu has a Ulu 10-point appeal and plans for the new black economy. And I'll just quickly read 1-5. 1, as black people, we take full responsibility for the economic destiny of our communities and nations. 2, black persons and black institutions, especially the black church, join together as members in a large-scale cooperative-owned business enterprise to pool our resources. 3, this cooperatively owned business enterprise is reflective of our unique culture and interest in the world. 4, the governance and legal form of the cooperative accommodate democratic principles, one member, one vote, with elected leadership. 5, only members of the cooperative and not the public have the opportunity to secure ownership units, equity in the business enterprise with the potential to amass billions of dollars for economic development. So this is one of the first things that anybody who goes to the Ulu site will be able to see, that this is not just something that sounds good. This is actually a blueprint that has been laid out to help empower us and give us the tools and things like that we need and the guidance that we need to implement this thing. So I just think it's a good opportunity, especially for a younger person or anybody that wants to do what Brother the Honorable Marcus Garvey has spoken on, and we can talk about Barbie's return. We are the Walren, if you'd like to next. But, you know, that's how long this dialogue has been going on, and it's you know, we have Black Wall Street and things like that, and we have to be honest with ourselves and accept the responsibility that segregation dismantled the black business and the mom-and-pop type of entities that we could rely on and had to rely on at one point in our community. So please enlighten us, Baba Hakima, about the new black economy, Garvey's return, and We on the Whirlwind. What is that piece exactly about?
Yeah, it's about developing at the base what eventually becomes an economy. You know, when Garvey mentioned that he would come back in a whirlwind, you know, he was here imprisoned here in Atlanta, in Atlanta Federal Penitentiary. And so I use it as a metaphor, and I often say, when I say Ulu, I sometimes, if you're in front of me, I put my fingers in the air and swirl them, you know, to suggest the whirlwind. But essentially, we talk about Black Wall Street a lot, and the more than 100 cities and communities of business excellence during that span of time. And, of course, many of them were physically attacked. But that wasn't what destroyed the communities. What really destroyed the community is the business sector in the European white community understanding that they needed to do some things differently to cause those communities to collapse. First of all, was inviting us across the tracks to do business and to manipulate our tastes. In other words, before we were not allowed to participate. Now we were being welcome to participate on the other side of the tracks. And so after so many turns in terms of exchanges and in energy in terms of commerce, after so many trips across the tracks, the energy on our side of the track collapses. And so even in Tulsa, we rebuilt after the bombing and after the looting, we rebuilt. But the second wave of deceit and penetration in our community was what really collapsed those communities. And so what we're doing with a slide on our website, it's called Garvey's Return. There's six elements in rebuilding our economy, and I won't go through them now, but the essence is ownership. Right now, throughout the U.S., in London, and in cities where we are conscious of Garvey and his message to us, we're asking each other to go into business and then to support the businesses that we build. And we're doing that to some extent, but it's not enough. Even in cities where we have strong black, buy black campaigns, and we do flash mobs where we organize and we go to the businesses en masse and we show some love for a couple of hours and then we may go someplace else, it's still not enough because there's a thing that's missing. And we think the thing that is missing is the certainty of ownership, that the business that I'm going to support is not only owned by a brother or a sister, someone who should have my back and I should have their back. We think that what is sufficient and what we have to offer is the fact that some of those businesses are in fact owned by us. In other words, we have equity in those companies, and it's possible for us to share in the profits. And so we feel that the current Buy Black campaign has not the good possibility of actually empowering us as a people without the inclusion of large-scale group-owned enterprises that can grow into the multi-millions, eventually the billion of dollars in terms of gross revenue. And so the Garvey's Return piece speaks to, you know, most of us picture a tornado the cyclonic effect, the tormatic effect of those rotating patterns. And we liken it to the patterns of turns in an economy. And in Wall Street, in Tulsa, and in some of the other communities, we outperformed the Asians, the Jews, the European, everybody. There were some studies that indicated that in those communities, there were 50, 60, and up to 80 turns exchanges before money went out of our community. And so they were very successful. And so in order to create a scenario where you have those kinds of returns today, maybe not at that level, but where you have 15 or 20 turns before the money goes out of the community, you got to. We feel that part of the mix of businesses that are owned by the community, and that if the workers and the management in those businesses do not do with the community's resources what is required, then the community can spank them, can fire them. In other words, the expectations are not just symbolic. I mean, there are behavior patterns that can either be rewarded or punished based on what the criteria is. In St. Louis, where you are, I would dare say that if you counted the number of black-owned restaurants there, it probably is a good number. But you probably do not have one wholesaler that supplies those restaurants. That cannot happen in a planned economy. And so in the ULU model, there would be naturally evolving new businesses that served existing businesses. And as you continue to grow, the grid would it would be smart. In other words, we would be developing businesses that, for instance, a florist business. We had a sister who presented to us Bussy Florist, a black-owned florist. But they participated in going to Africa and actually seeing where some of their flowers would come from. But we have to develop the capacity to grow those flowers, to transport those flowers, and know all along the trail how to take care of them, how to preserve them. And so in every industry that we look at, we got to look at it from a vertical integration perspective in terms of how can we grow new businesses to serve the existing businesses. So to go back to Garvey's return, and creating and sustaining an economy. And that's what the goal is. It's not just building businesses, but how do you create the platform that allows them to move in unity and in concert with each other as you build an economy. So banks, lending institutions, insurance, mortgage companies, and the like have to be created and integrated into the process.
Excellent, Bob Akima. And I love that when you speak about the planned economy, and that we need to look at buying patterns and how we spend our money, because that's exactly what Procter & Gamble does. Any of the large Fortune 500 companies, that's exactly what they do. And Procter & Gamble is here in Cincinnati. And I know that they do it. I have friends that get paid to participate in studies and things like that. Not to say that ULU's at that scale, but to look at how we spend our money is essential to putting any sort of business and economic development plan and objective together. And one of the things that we talked about that we also should seriously consider is minimizing how we spend on quote-unquote luxury items or frills and things like that, because that's a lot of money that we will never see again, and doesn't get recycled in our community, but also redirecting the things that we have to spend money on when we can to black businesses. And there's some people who believe that any sort of participation in capitalism is continuing to hold us down, but it depends on how you spend the money. And people need to really understand that. It comes down to how we spend our money, because we all have some sort of resources, even if we are on assistance. We spend our money a certain way every time, and we're going to have to retrain ourselves to redirect that. And so how do you feel about the minimizing part of how we spend our money? Because I know that there are a blue dozen hair stores in the community where I am within 5 blocks of me. They're everywhere. So I'm sure it's the same there in Atlanta as well. So can you talk about that too a little bit?
Yeah, and in every city. But I think the main thing that you and I and other conscious brothers and sisters have to focus on is what we do and the example that we set. Sometimes the aware brothers and sisters are guilty of constantly bringing attention to the fact that some of our people are frivolous with them spending, don't do the right things. In other words, there are enough of us who are aware who, and when we do the right thing and set the clear example, then it's not what we say, it's what we say and demonstrate. In other words, we'll have, you know, models to show and involve our people with. And slowly we can win them over through inviting them to participate in another paradigm. I think we give too much time and attention to the ills, some of the mispractices, some of the things that we do that don't make sense. But at the same time, those of us who make those statements have not created the example, the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm calling, and we are calling on the conscious community, the self-identified black community in this country and globally, to put up a shut up. There are millions of us, and we have to build the clear examples, the models, and do a good job at them and grow them. And our people are waiting on us. Even when they're wowing and you think they're out of their minds, but we're not. We simply have been, you know, told so many stories and presented with so many scenarios, we don't know what's up or down. But in our hearts, we do not appreciate being dominated and exploited. And if we come up with different models that work, then our people are predisposed to coming towards those. They're not going to all come at once. But we've got to build it, and we've got to demonstrate what it is that we have been saying through the clear example.
Ashe. We're almost to the top of the hour. We usually take a break at the top of the hour. So hang out with us, Baba Hakima. Callers, listeners, when we come back, if you'd like to participate in the conversation, ask a question, make a comment, please don't forget that you need to push the number 1. You're listening to Sign of the Times, Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by New Power Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Hey, my beautiful people. This is Andriana, and I'm host of the show Holistic Health and Healing on the New Power Radio Network. We all know that without your help, nothing else is worthwhile, right? I mean, what's the point of being rich if you end up spending all the time you have left and all the money you've made on the way to get back the health that was neglected on the journey? Well, let's get back to making our health and well-being a priority. Then the wealth and prosperity will automatically flow. So join us as we dive into all matters of health and well-being holistically in all areas of your life. We'll discuss the causes and effects of diseases and medical conditions and what you can do to heal from these effects. You'll hear suggestions on how to best utilize the medical establishment for your benefit instead of their profit. We'll explore all of the latest innovations in health and well-being and how to apply them in all areas of your life. In the end, we must remove everything that's creating and maintaining the pain and disease in our lives in order to treat our wounds and to heal. Here's to your holistic health. Many blessings. Peace.
Hello, I'm Dr. James Thomas Jones III, and I've just recently completed a manuscript titled Creating Revolution as They Advance, a Historical Narrative of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. This work traces the demise of the nonviolent civil disobedience of the civil rights movement and the rise of both the Black Power era and Black Panther Party. Special attention is paid to Panther leaders such as Huey P. Newton, Bobby Seale, Fred Hampton, Eldridge Cleaver, Bunchy Carter, and Geronimo Pratt. This story is told through the view of the Panthers and details the horrific, underhanded attacks that the organization experienced at the hands of the FBI's counterintelligence program under the orders of J. Edgar Hoover. If you're looking for the true story of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, pick up a copy of Creating Revolution as They Advance, a Historical Narrative of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense on Amazon.com. Thank you. Hello, my name is Dr. James Thomas Jones III, and I am the author of an exciting new book titled Obruni, An African-American Odyssey Home. Most African-Americans have some desire to discover where they are originally from. Obruni is the story of my personal journey to find my ancestral home. Through a host of twists and turns, I must relate that I was able to have many of my most pressing questions regarding who I am and where I come from answered by some of the least likely sources. In fact, I was able to discover some surprising things during my trip to Ghana. If such things interest you, please support A Black Writer and visit Amazon.com and pick up your copy of Obruni, An African-American Odyssey Home, today. Thank you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Inside of the Times, brought to you by New Power Radio Network. Welcome back, Baba Hakima.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit more about how people can support Ulu. I see also on the website that there is an Ulu store. Can you tell us a little bit about the Ulu store and how it works?
Well, currently there's not much in the store. There's just T-shirts in the store. The next things that will be in the store are coffee, maybe beans and ground coffee. So we really don't have an e-commerce platform at this time. It's just branding for Ulu.
Okay, well, that's important.
We will have a website associated with the coffee house as well, with Cafe Ulu, and we'll sell branded items there. But we don't see ourselves developing an e-commerce platform where we're selling a lot of items. Our focus And we have members who have tremendous e-commerce platforms. If from our homepage, if I would encourage people to click the intersection. There's a road sign where you see convergence of two lanes into one, and click on that road sign, and it will take you to a page where there are links to various platforms. Two of our members, one iMall out of California and Izenia out of Ohio, these are Ulu members who have e-commerce platforms that market products, goods and services from our people around the country and from around the world. So we don't see ourselves moving into that space. We're going to concentrate more on the brick-and-mortar businesses and creating jobs and with benefits and great salaries and focus on that aspect more than the e-commerce platforms.
Ashe. We have a caller in queue. Would you like for me to open the mic? Is that okay?
Sure.
Last 4 digits, 7376. Welcome to Sign of the Times. Who are we speaking with?
Greetings, Queen Tahira. This is Andrianne. How are you?
Hey, Sister Andrianne. Welcome, welcome. We just played your lovely commercial, so it's good to hear your voice again.
Always, always. Hey, Baba.
Hey, sis. How you doing? I love your commercial.
Right on. Many blessings and thank you. Hey, I'm on the site right now, and I'm kind of digging it. What I really appreciate is the free report that you offer, just getting the information out. And 'cause that's the one thing that I think that will really get us over that bridge is educating everybody how important it really is. And, you know, we are familiar with the, you know, the simple business model storefronts and stuff, but you touched on something that really pulled at me. And is that, and that we miss, is that we really have to get it from the Ruta to the Tuta, from whatever the product is, right? So from producing the product to transporting the product, you know, we have to get it at all points. You know? And that's what the big box stores, you know, they have. They have that, you know, as a monopoly. So I really appreciate that, the thought you put towards all of that and really what family-centered economics really means. So,
beautiful.
Yeah, many blessings. I appreciate that. And I want to
thank you
for everything you're setting up here.
Beautiful. And
I look forward to working with you.
Yeah, one of the things we didn't cover is that each of our business installations will be managed by the members. The work, it's a worker-owner environment. And so we want to have these platforms fun places to be, wholesome, family-friendly, and good-paying jobs with benefits. And once the businesses reach profitability, then the first dibs on the profits go back as a bonus to the members and to the workers. So the worker, in addition to a salary with benefits and a good environment, can also look to receive bonuses as those businesses are successful.
I see.
Yeah, yeah. Well, sis, you're going to make me listen to that, to your broadcast.
I look forward to you chiming in.
Yeah. Because, you know, the health, you know, I mean, we can't get around it, right?
It's why we do what we do.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. I appreciate you.
Always. You too.
Ashe. Yeah, Sister Andrianne, I know that you have a couple of business things that you're doing with ASEA and things like that. Can you talk to Baba Akima on the minimizing piece that we're going to be covering on one of our Friday night broadcasts and the fact that you are on point, Baba Akima, when you speak of the effects that our health have on the decisions that we make in, and especially when it comes to what we spend our money on. So enlighten Baba Akima a little bit more about the broadcast, Sister Andrianne, and what you do.
Oh, yeah. So what we focus in on Friday nights is the whole holistic aspect, starting even with the stance that health is its own revolution, because you're able to not depend on others for your longevity, for your prosperity. So and you're taking that and starting it from your house, your center of operation, the love that you foster and garner from the people around you, and then taking that forward so that we can build, you know, the businesses and the economics to prosper further and connect the community. So it really is the same, you know, kind of sister grassroots.
Yeah.
We're all interconnected in that aspect.
Exactly.
Can't get around it.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, you know, we can point to areas and treat them as if they're disconnected, but they're never disconnected. Our economics is involved intricately with politics and culture and all of it. There's a health component to almost everything that we do, whether physical health, spiritual health, mental health. And so, yeah, we appreciate what you do. You know, if you don't have that life force, that energy, it's hard to accomplish anything.
Yeah. And also, too, one of our problems is one of the ways we disenfranchise ourselves is because
we spend too many resources, I find, too many of our resources giving that away to the pharmaceutical industry, the drug companies, you know, even the bad food, bad water. You know, a lot of our resources get away from us, and we don't, because we associate it with our health or, you know, just our day-to-day living, we don't make that connection. So when you start to regain your power of your health, you actually pull in your resources, and then you can go and redistribute them for a more prosperous, positive agenda.
Yes, yes, indeed. Thank you.
Ashe, so Baba, I came at, you know, our conversations here on Sign of the Times are quite intentional, and we have a saying that we use, turning the struggle into a strategy, one conversation at a time. And so the partnership with Sister Andrian and Blacktopia, the partnership that we have with Dr. Jones and others, the Pan-African Alliance, it's our goal to where we can be bridge builders. But we definitely unite with what ULU has proposed and what it's already doing. And also another thing that I know from personal and professional experience is that it's good that we're out here doing all this socially responsible work, if you will, setting up the platform to have these kinds of conversations. But during that process, we have to also be able to sustain ourselves. And so when I first heard you speak about ULU and what it was doing and the opportunity that it offered, I mean, it was like, you know, I heard birds and music and that whole thing. Because that's the part that we've been missing is being...
Yeah. Let me pick up on that.
Yes, sir.
There are football stadiums in America. Well, I won't even go there. In the black community, during the football season, I was going to go to the big stadiums, but I'll stay local. 5,000, 10,000 screaming fans in the stands every Friday night around the country. There's thousands of us. And so when we think about the $1.3 trillion that supposedly is spending power that we have, I'm not sure if that's real, but it's probably large. But the fact that Africans in America and Africans on the planet, period, but let's talk about Africans in America, when we look at our history, the all the aspects of our history and where we are, we feel, and I'll personalize it, I feel that a crime is being committed by us when we haven't devised methods to tap into and transfer or redirect a reasonable portion of the wealth that flows through our fingers and place it in a common pool. And I'm not talking about a campaign that changes our minds or changes our way of thinking. The few of us who are right-thinking brothers and sisters have to devise ways, even with our current thinking, to infuse into the commerce of our communities methods that divert millions of dollars on a consistent basis to a common purpose. And so that's what we feel ULU is. It's a it's a process, it's an infrastructure, a machinery, a platform that as it grows and is integrated into the community, we're going to be able to create hundreds of thousands of new jobs. We're going to be able to fund some of the things that we are fond of, especially around our children. We're going to be able to reward people who do work on behalf of our people and not do it from the fact that we got a Ford Foundation grant or a government grant, but because we realized that we were in a position to manipulate and take advantage of what is all around us. There are opportunities that we simply are not formatted to take advantage of now. And we often will refer to other communities, the Korean communities, the Chinese communities, the Lebanese communities, the East Indian communities that seem to have more going for them from an economic empowerment standpoint than we do. But they really have less to work with than we do. The thing that they are clear about that we're not clear about is that they are here to manipulate and take advantage of every opportunity for their group. And they don't get it twisted, and I think we do. And so I just say that it's imperative that we quickly get to a position where we can stop some of our courageous brothers and sisters who go out in the deep water, keep them from drowning, and throw a life raft for some dollars and some resources so they can continue to swim for us on our behalf.
Ashe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ashe. So Bobby, you mentioned earlier too about sovereignty, briefly, and so we talked about that as well, how important it is for us to reclaim our power, if you will. How does Ulu deal with sovereignty?
Well, Ulu is a tool developed from a sovereign mentality or a sovereign psyche. It simply says that ultimately we're responsible. If we're big and bad enough to come into this existence, and we're big and bad enough to give birth to other creatures, our children, to come into here, then it's upon us to take full responsibility. So we see sovereignty as having supreme authority. That doesn't mean that you have the only authority, but you always must be focus on gaining sufficient authority that more times than not you have your will. Your will is what prevails. Otherwise, you're subservient, and that's a willing position. And so we see Ulu promoting responsibility, and so we say that Ulu is a tool of African liberation, a tool of sovereignty, a tool or mechanism or device through which and by which we can gain greater and greater economic control so that we can have a greater influence over the overall social life of the communities where we live, the nations where we live, and look forward to also having some politically sovereign space that does some things for us from a global perspective that almost no nation does for us at this point. I mean, obviously, a good many brothers and sisters point to Ghana. At a point, we pointed to Tanzania back when I was in my youth. We had high hopes for South Africa, and it didn't happen. We see Ulu in that vein as an institution that, as we develop and perfect, will help us better galvanize to aggregate our resources and point them in a direction and have them, in fact, promote and protect our vital interests as African people on the planet.
Ashe. Thank you for that. And in the current political environment, I think it's really essential that we continue to communicate the message of ULU and put out there that there is this opportunity. And so economically, we have to be creative. And one of the things that we talked about here in Cincinnati is a boycott behind the decision not to jail or prosecute necessarily, where we had a University of Cincinnati police officer murder a brother who was very well known and respected in the community because he didn't have a front license plate. And so in the current political environment, you know, from Trump to Congress to legislation and things that we deal with locally, do you think that those things will have an effect on how ULU develops, and if so, in what way?
Well, they may or may not. but if they are part of the agenda of brothers and sisters from our community, then we want to support them. And one of the things I spoke about yesterday in a conversation, Dr. Clark, in one of his videos, talks about we generally think of good guys and bad guys, and we feel that there's that balance. And he says, you know, you got to really come to understand that there are environments where there are no good guys. They're all bad. And in other words, there is no – anything that is not you is not you. And if your posture is that for you to fare well and to be safe depends on some good guy that's not you to change or modify its behavior, Dr. Clark, again, warns us that in some scenarios, there are no good guys, and the other is a predator. And so I simply say that to say that while you have to fight, you have to try and protect yourself, and you have to keep away the negative forces, and you use every tool that you can, some few of us must steal away and fashion tools that have not been fashioned before. There's an African proverb says something to the effect that you don't make your shield on the battlefield, that you have to steal away and perfect those shields, those weapons, outside of the battle. And that may not be difficult to do. So we support and encourage anything that people do that's heartfelt, that's out of their heart, and they feel, because they're going to do it anyway, whether you say they should or should not. If it's in their heart and in their spirit to do, they're going to do it. And I think the human spirit is such that there is always a progression towards a higher and higher level of performance. You know, I think the e-book that I shared with you, the brother Ezra Aharon, his second book was Sovereign Evolution. He felt that intelligent beings progressively move to a position of sovereignty. In other words, they naturally progress to a position where they wanted to be in control for their group, have sovereignty for their group. So I say that in the context of the boycotts, the Buy Black campaigns, all the things that we do, in every case, there are lessons to be learned, there are battles to be won, but overall, we're not safe as African people on the planet until Europe has to look at us eyeball to eyeball, China, India, wherever, as more than a billion people on the planet. It is unhealthy for us to have to continue to look up to other cultures and other people. But the machinery that will get us to the point where we can look at and exchange with other cultures eyeball to eyeball, that machinery is probably not going to be built on the battlefield of protests. But protest is necessary. But it's also necessary that some of us understand the value of stealing away and building tools that are for the purpose of us being in a rulership position over our resources and our lands. And so I support much of what we do, but sometimes we cannot afford to participate in it day to day and have it consume our time and our energy.
Ashe, Sister Andrian, did you have anything that you wanted to say behind that?
Yes, I agree 100%. Often we don't know. I don't know if we fully recognize as a full community how who we're actually having to deal with and in what capacity. Look up to the Europeans and the other groups around the world. We are, you know, busy actually kind of champion, hey, we're human, we're just like you. We don't really recognize fully that unless we have an economic stance globally, there is no equality. That's how they base their system.
Yeah.
And so we kind of miss that boat.
Yeah.
In addition to that, part of that is that we don't recognize who we're in the battles with. We think that just because they're not our direct enemy, that they're our friends, it's not that black and white. So we have to come to recognize that, especially as we would continue to appeal to our various municipalities and governments for so-called fair treatment,
yeah,
that even though they may not overtly or even will, you know, turn a blind eye or a cheek or whatever and say, okay, later, we don't recognize that that's not our battle. That's not where we can't foster and sharpen our iron on that. We have to go to work within and come back to our fort, if we continue to use that analogy, to make more tools, make more weapons, for foster more shields to come back into a battle, you know, the battlefield, the real battlefield.
Yeah.
So we have to kind of get that straight. We cannot continue to go forth in these municipalities and say, hey, you know, this is not fair. Well, life is not fair. The world is not fair. But what they're looking at us is to say, it's fair for those who are ready to play the game. And so we need to go and foster in our tools, get the right pieces to play the game.
Yeah.
And that's why I really appreciate what you're doing with Ulu, that this is the best way. Because these, not to get it twisted, these groups, you know, they come here specifically to play this game, this world game. They come here to get an economic stance.
Yeah.
It's not just trying to come here for individualistic opportunities for their families. They're coming here as a force for their racial community, for their cultural community, to get a stance on that playing field. And that's where we need to foster our self-determination. That doesn't come without self-responsibility. And so we don't want to do it. We haven't really kind of accepted that challenge en masse.
Right.
Been a long time since since we have taken on the whole integrational stance. We've lost sight of that. We were sidetracked, derailed even. But we have to go forth and regroup, you know, as a world force of a billion plus people, and come forth with taking our responsibility of self determination. Indeed, Ashe.
Ashe.
I thought I yield.
Mm-hmm. Ashe.
Yes.
Ashe, thank you, Sister Andrian. Baba Kima, before we get ready to let you go, are there any events coming up that Ulu is a part of that you want to make the community aware of?
Um, Hulu pretty much is focused on the work that we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
One of our board members, Brother DJ Jordan, he's the primary architect of the Black Power Awards. That'll be coming up in a few months, I guess in November. But in March of next year, our annual members meeting, where we'll have brothers convening from all across the country and people coming in from outside of the U.S. will be coming for our annual meeting, and that's the second weekend in March of next year. But we typically don't have events. Now, 'cause remember, mm-hmm. we're not a social organization. We're a business. And true to our business model, most of our activities are quasi-legal, accounting, process, building process manuals, just the inner workings of how are we going to manage thousands and tens of thousands of members. What does that look like? What kind of software, what kind of expertise we got to have to do that. Looking at sourcing product, looking at brand and things of that nature. So we spend our time doing that. Now, that's not to say that as individuals we're not also a part of other efforts in the community and do other things.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sort of the the mechanic who has his head underneath the hood all day, and so I don't see a lot of things abroad, mm-hmm. things that are going on otherwise. But no, I wouldn't point to any event that we're having. We normally participate in the Kwanzaa season, the fourth night of Kwanzaa, Cooperative Economics Night, and we will probably do the same this year. But no events. There are no conventions or conferences that that I know of that we've been invited to as well. We did participate in the State of the Black World Conference in Newark I think it was around the beginning of the year in New York. Well, in Newark, New Jersey. But no events that I can point to. Now,
sure.
We like
well,
it. We
count,
like
that
yourself.
Annual meeting, especially.
Oh, yeah. And so I would just encourage people to go to our website and study or at least review the videos that are there on the homepage. Go to our YouTube channel to see some footage from our past members' meetings and cooperative summits. But the main thing I want brothers and sisters to do is to wrestle with the notion of thinking of something different. You know, there's this saying about a definition of insanity, you know, being, mm-hmm. you know, expecting a different result by doing the same things over and over again. Again, and expecting a different result. They say that was Einstein, but, you know that wisdom, you know, preceded him, you know, as we are the parent
That's
people
right.
of the planet. But right now, many of our brothers and sisters are simply trying to grind harder. And we're really not open to looking at new models and new paradigms. From an economic empowerment perspective, we're asking people to be open-minded and consider that there's another way in addition to entrepreneurship and black business ownership from a capitalistic perspective. We want brothers and sisters to create the space in their thinking to consider at least that there is a group ownership model, cooperative model, a mutual model, a socialist model that could do a lot for us, that in some scenarios the models that we're used to cannot do. So the main thing we're asking people to do is be courageous enough to consider that it's time for a new model, and that the things that we've done in the past, you know, I'm in my 70s now. I'll be 73 or 70. No, I'll be 73 in August. I've been involved in our people's struggles since my early 20s in the sit-ins in North Carolina. And I've never not been involved in one way or another. But from an economic perspective, we haven't tried anything differently since, on a small scale, small co-ops, but to look at a group ownership model, a social model, from a grand perspective, we just haven't done that work, and we think it's required because what we're doing is not successful in terms of economic empowerment efforts. It's just not sustainable. It's not successful nor sustainable. So that's the main thing that we're asking, and when people go to our website, we're just asking them to consider a different model or a different paradigm.
Ashe. I want to thank you for coming on the air with us, Baba Akima, and we do look forward to having you back, especially as New Power Radio Network continues to grow its relationship with you in the way that, you know, will allow us to sustain ourselves while we continue to do work. And so thank you as well for the opportunity to work with you on the Coffee House and the things that are happening there. And so I know that it's going to be productive because, like I told you, you know, when I thought about a coffee house here in Cincinnati, I could smell the coffee brewing and see the books on the shelves, and that's how it starts. We have to continue to plant the seed and continue to make these relationships grow and do the work that it takes to build the communication in building and lifting up these relationships. So thank you so much for coming on the air with us today. We appreciate you, and you're welcome back anytime.
Beautiful. Thank you, sis.
All right. So, Adrian, thank you for chiming in as well, and I'll see you probably tomorrow, but definitely on Friday as we continue to our discussions on healthy healing and working the dynamics of that. So thank you as well, sis.
Ashe. Thank you.
Ashe. All right, everybody. We will see you tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I think Dr. Jones is going to be here, but we'll see. I'm going to hit him up now here in a few after I get off my conference call with Ulu. So thank you, everybody. We will see you tomorrow night. Talk to you soon. Peace.
Yo, all I need is one mic, one beat, one stage, one nigga front, my face on the front page. Only if I had one gun, one girl, and one crib, one God to show me how to do things as son did. Pure, like a cup of virgin blood, mixed with 151, one sip will make a nigga flip. Writing names on my hollow tips, plotting shit, mad violence, who I'm gon' body, this hood politics acknowledge it. Leave bodies chopped up in garbages, seeds watch us, grow up and try to follow us, police watch us, roll up and try knocking us. One knee I duck, could it be my time is up? With my luck, I got up, the cop shot again. Bust out glass bursts, a fiend drops a Heineken. Ricocheting between the spots that I'm hiding in. Blacking out, I shoot back, fuck getting hit. This is my hood, I'm a rep to the death of it. To everybody, come on, little niggas is grown. Look rats, don't abortion your wound. We need more warriors soon. Shit from the stars, sun and the moon. And it's like the police chases, street sweepers and coppers. Sick up kids with no conscience, leaving victims with doctors. If you really think you're ready to die, but nine's out, this is what nine's about. Nigga, the time is now.
One mic. All I need is one mic.